On today's show, we talk with stress management expert and keynote speaker, Jones Laughlin. I'm Ari Frangias, and this is the Eagles Talent Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau, for speakers who inspire, educate, and entertain. You can find us online at eaglestalent.com. Remember, you can listen to our podcast on our site, eaglestalent.com, or subscribe to it on iTunes by simply typing Eagles Talent in the search. Hi, listeners. Thanks for tuning into the Eagles Talent Podcast. I'm here with stress management expert, keynote speaker, and Mr. Solutions himself, Jones Laughlin. Thanks for joining
me. Wow. Oh, thank you. What a kind introduction. This expert, this should be interesting.
Yes. So tell me about your background. I know you were formerly an educator. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. I was an educator for several years and then left to enter the corporate speaking and training market. Found my niche and my passion in time management, work-life balance training. Also had a huge step in my career when I was chosen as the trainer of trainers for the book Who Moved My Cheese, training on change management. I really began to see how simple messages could really help people move forward when they were going through change. Moved from there into more of an author role as well as a keynote speaker. 2007, I was very blessed to have a book I co-authored called Juggling Elephants to be published both domestically and internationally. And since that time, have had other books to be published all around leadership, work-life balance, or time management.
Great. When did you make the switch to speaking professionally?
Sure. That was in 1994. My wife and I had the conversation that, you know, we were both educators and said, you know, one of us probably ought to look at doing something different. We both loved education, but she said, you know, you've always had this dream of doing more speaking and training. And my wife was very gracious. She said, I'll give you 5 years to be successful. And if that doesn't work, then you're going to go find a real job. And I'm going to come home and we're going to start raising a family. And so it did work out. After 3 years, she was able to come home with our then one daughter as my speaking and training career continued to grow.
That's great. 5 years is a nice window, too. Very gracious.
Oh, she was very gracious and still is to this day. Yes.
So how did you become Mr. Solutions?
Oh, Mr. Solutions. You know, that's an interesting title. And I think whenever I hear that, it's the whole idea that people are looking for some answers to move forward. And sometimes they just are overwhelmed because they're looking at so much. I mean, take work-life balance, for example. People are just so overwhelmed with all they have to do that they won't stop and look at, okay, what's one small thing you could do to move forward? What would reduce a little bit of your stress? We can't reduce all of it because that's called dying sometimes. Right. But what can we do to help you move forward with this issue or that challenge? And I find people resonate with that because they say, okay, now, okay, I've tackled that, I've handled that, now let's move on to something else. So I think helping people find some quick solutions that help them move forward quickly is what I really get jazzed about in my mm-hmm. work.
So you're, as you mentioned before, you're the author of Always Growing, Juggling Elephants, and Getting the Blue Ribbon. Can you explain the meaning behind each of your book titles?
Absolutely. And there's actually another one in there, Getting to It. We'll start with it. Mm-hmm. Getting to It is a time management book, and it's all about what it sounds like. It's getting to it, that mm-hmm. most important thing. How do we focus in a world that's so distracted between technology right. and expectations? Getting Blue Ribbon is a model for change built on the idea of growing award-winning apples. So it's a parable. Juggling Elephants is about the struggle of too much to do. When we're trying to get everything done, it feels like we're trying to juggle elephants. And so we look at the solution being managing your work in life like a circus. Mm-hmm. Finally, Always Growing is a leadership model built on the idea of being a gardener, a grower of people. So the common theme in most of my books, as you can tell, is a parable or a metaphor for people to bring their situation to the parable and then figure out how they can move forward using some of the ideas in that parable.
Right. Those are great metaphors, especially the circus one.
Yeah, I just finished a keynote presentation immediately before our podcast about using the juggling elephants metaphor and trying to manage too much to do. Mm-hmm. And they really resonated with that because we all know what a circus looks like. So, okay, how do we right. apply those concepts to our life?
Right. I think it's accurate to life. So in your keynote speeches, you use wit and humor as ways to relate to your audience. How did that become a part of your presentation?
Well, if you go back to a conversation I had with a psychologist in Mississippi several years ago, she bases it on the fact that I was overweight as a child and that I tried to get people to laugh at me. And so I have carried that throughout my mm-hmm. life. Now, that was her her prognosis, if you will. Yeah. And it's probably pretty accurate. as an overweight child, I did that. But I just find that, first of all, humor, anytime we can get people to laugh, it causes them to relax. I mean, we know that neurologically it does. Wit, I think, is just something people enjoy when it's done appropriately. And it just adds a little more energy to the room as people are listening. Mm-hmm. And then I love wit from the audience. You know, when mm-hmm. I ask a lot of questions and have people in the audience say things that are sarcastic or witty, that just always, to me, just livens up the room even more.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to relate to people as well. Right. Yeah. You're known to engage audiences with a variety of group exercises during your sessions. Can you describe some of them for me?
Oh, absolutely. One of the ones that I just finished using in my keynote earlier today was an exercise about juggling too much. And what I actually did was I had the group circle up, and they had imaginary items they would be tossing to each other. And we started mm-hmm. by just tossing one, which was brutally easy. And they're mm-hmm. looking at me like, this is not hard. And then slowly we add more items to the group, to the point where at one point they've got like seven items they're trying to keep in play, if you will, or keep juggling. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard. We've only got six people.
Right.
And so what it teaches them is that, you know, when things start getting busy, we start dropping things. Because of those six items that I gave them, many of the groups would lose a couple because they'd forget what they were supposed to be throwing or catching or handing off to someone yeah. else because of the speed. The other thing it teaches them, you know what, we need to have a plan. The groups that would actually stop and try to figure out a plan for how to toss the items to each other tended not to lose the items and tended to have a lot less stress. So mm-hmm. activities like that, I think, are just real life, and then people get the solutions from the activity and then can move forward, you know, with what they've learned. You know, one of the philosophies I have is that, you know, people want to be engaged. Mm-hmm. The second one is that I really believe this is true, is that the best answers come from the audience. And even in a keynote setting, I like to ask questions that allow them to be the experts, because they are. They're the experts on their situation. It's my opportunity to give them a blueprint or a framework to see how to move forward, but they know their situation better than anyone else. Right. I don't need to try to be the expert on stage that knows their world, because that smells fake in a hurry, and you can right. really lose an audience. Yeah,
right. That's a great point. So August is Win with Civility Month. We want to know, when is the last time your civility was tested?
Oh, let's see. How many times yesterday? you know, I would think that one of mine, especially in traveling, mm-hmm. it just hits me immediately, because when I was flying here yesterday, my civility was tested when we had a catering truck back into the plane, or that I was sitting on getting ready to take off. And of course, you know, we're all just going, oh, man. And so my first thought was, you know, this idiot driving this truck, and oh, I can't believe he did that. And now I'm going to be late for getting to New Orleans. And so my first thought was, what? Whip out my phone and send out a tweet. And I was going to say, you know, plane just got hit by catering truck. Wouldn't you hate to be that driver?
Mm-hmm.
And I caught myself and I went, you know what, Jones? You've done a few stupid things in your life too. And so I had to catch myself and go, you know what? That's not helpful. And so I didn't send the tweet. And so, I mean, I know that's kind of maybe a silly example, but that's when my civility was tested. And in mm-hmm. that situation, I won. Now, ask me about people trying to stuff, you know, bags overhead that are too big and those things. And I lost my civility.
Yeah. Well, I think that's such a good point. Like, I think traveling is probably like one of the top places where your civility is tested. Some of your speaking topics include stress management, life balance, and change. What role does civility play in your topics?
Oh, wow. How much time do we have?
All the time.
I understand. I think it has a huge role. Civility has a huge role in change, because we sometimes get so upset with people when they won't change quickly enough. And we don't stop and say, you know, wait a minute, what are the reasons why they're holding on to the old way of doing something? We don't have those conversations like, help me understand why you want to keep, you know, this process or that system or that software, right, or work with customers in that way. And I think when we use our civility and try to dig a little deeper into their reasonings, then usually either one of two things happens. One is that we see an opportunity for us to educate them and where they can see that, hey, you know what, it's not going to be as bad as you think, or the results are going to give you something better. Or the other one is, oh, wow, you know, I didn't realize that's what, you know, you were stuck on. Let's figure out how we can make this work, so that you won't be holding back. So I think change management is a huge one. When it comes to time management, I think there's a lot of opportunity there for civility when we look at how we work with each other on how things get done. You know, we sometimes get upset because other people don't have the same work ethic that we do, or they don't work in the same way. We especially see that with generations. The older workers can't understand why the younger workers, whatever younger is, aren't coming in early and staying late, when the reality is many of those younger workers might be coming in a little bit later, might be, you know, working throughout the day and then going home in the evening and logging in at 8, 9 o'clock at night, right, to do more work. So I think it all comes back to having better conversations, and whether it's change management, leadership, or whatever, to find out what's driving that other person's behavior before we just, you know, pounce on them.
How do you think it comes into play regarding stress management?
I think one of the things when it comes to with stress management is we rarely reduce our stress by getting angry or upset with someone.
Right.
Normally, it increases our stress. And normally what happens is the other person reciprocates with anger or frustration or raised voices. And so it raises our stress even higher. And so I think if we can stop for a moment, even when we're really stressed out, and we really just want to blow off at someone or something, if we can just stop ourselves. In fact, a great quote by Dr. Richard Swenson was this. He says, "We must remember there is absence of malice, but presence of callous." People are simply not sensitive to your situation. And I can't tell you how many times I have reduced my stress by just reciting that one quote in my head. Mm-hmm. There's absence of malice, but presence of callous. People are so busy with their own stuff, they don't realize that, you know, they're standing in the middle of the aisle somewhere. They don't realize that, you know, they're holding you up whenever it's in traffic, right, many times. They're not doing that maliciously. They're just not paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any other tips for stress management? I know that quote works for, sure, you, but what else would you,
sure,
say?
Yeah. Well, all kinds of things to do for stress management. The first thing that I always like to ask clients, whether it's in a training environment or especially if it's in my coaching world, is, you know, let's kind of dig to the bottom of what's causing that stress. And normally what's stressing them out is deeper than just the activity or the event in front of them. Normally it is they feel like they're failing at something, and that's causing them to, you know, lash out at others when things aren't going well because it's just another failure they're seeing begin to line up. Or maybe in my world, and a lot of times what I see is that, you know, maybe people just aren't taking care of themselves. They're stressed out because either they're coming off a caffeine high or their own one, or they're losing sleep and they're tired. And of course we know what that does to our emotions. Or maybe something just isn't going well at work and they've just kind of held that inside. And so what I often encourage my clients to do is sit down and go, okay, what's the real, you know, source of this stress? And let's talk through that, find it. And then again, going back to what I like to do is, what's one small step you could take to move forward to deal with that stress?
So typically the stress is deeply rooted. It's not whatever the surface level argument is or whatever,
right,
it may be.
Right, okay, exactly. I just find that. And, you know, it happens more often than we realize is that there's, you know, that proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. Is that there's some incident or event that we blow up at, and that's really usually not the root cause of our stress. It's just the last thing that just put us over the edge.
So it's really most important, or a big step in combating stress, is finding out what the root of it is in the first place.
Yeah, and addressing that. Mm-hmm. The other piece, I think, is just stepping back and taking some time to reflect. I really encourage, you know, people to take some time to really look at what is it that's causing the stress. But the only way you can do that is if you stop. So mm-hmm. many people, when they're stressed out, they want to keep working. They want to keep trying to get things done. And the reality is you're hurting your own productivity. You're hurting your own well-being when you keep pushing like that.
Right.
Just stop. Give yourself 15 minutes, 30 minutes to really look at the situation. Go to a place of less stress, whether that's physically, mentally, or emotionally,
right.
to begin to get more objective about your stress situation.
So it's good to just take a minute and breathe.
Exactly. Take that deep breath and release it slowly. And there's all kinds of techniques out there. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's just slow down, stop for a minute, and get some perspective.
What is next for Jones Laughlin?
Thank you for that. a couple of things that are going on in my world. We are in the process of developing some new training programs around my book, Always Growing, leadership book that came out in February. Also, one of the things I'm really excited about as well is I have started the journey to be certified as a professional coach. I've been doing coaching for about a year. Informally, a lot of my clients were coming to me and saying, hey, would you coach me? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not certified, but I could do some of it. And I just really love the opportunity to coach clients. And so I have started the process for formal certification, because I think you need to be trained. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly there are people doing it who aren't, but I want to be the best at this. So I want to get trained and certified. And so I have a wide array of clients coming to me now, both from college students to people who are 50 plus and looking to make some life changes. And it's really been amazing how in the coaching world that I've learned if you can be a good listener. And so one of the things that's new for Jones Laughlin right now is really working on listening in every conversation that I have. And it's fascinating the things you learn about people and the ways that you can help people if you'll just listen, which goes along with your theme of civility.
right. Yeah. It all ties together.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's great. Congratulations on getting certified in coaching and working towards it. Jones, thank you again for chatting with me. Listeners, you can find Jones on our Eagles Talent site and, of course, on social media. You're on Twitter?
Yes, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Find me in any of those places. Yes.
Great. Be sure to follow Jones Laughlin. Again, thank you for listening.